Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Happy Throwback Thursday.
Oh, you're so spooky, Kevin.
The month of October, Rob. We have to.
Hey, it's your favorite month.
Well, it's my wife's favorite month, and by proxy, over the last 9 years, it has become my favorite month. But yes, indeedy. Although it's changed because we watch horror movies all day, but you have to watch what you watch when you have a 16-month-old, baby. So you can't really watch It or the sequel to It or the remake of It.
Will Crawford understand or no? He'll get scared.
In the last week, he cognitively has jumped to another level. So he's very aware of things now. And so he is observant. He plays by himself now. He wakes up and he's like, oh my gosh, my toys. I got to go. I got to get out of bed at 5 a.m. to go play with them. He's just aware of an outside thing. So yes, things on the television now. We had something on last night that I was like, we have to turn this off. Even though it's a cheesy movie from the 80s, the gore and everything. He was like transfixed by it, and I thought, no, let's do it like Witches is a pretty decent movie, the Roald Dahl movie with Angelica Houston. Even the faces are a little scary, but it's Jim Henson, so it's not so bad. But Nightmare Before Christmas, he loved Ken Page in that. He was obsessed with the Uli or whatever his name is. So it's those kinds of things he becomes. But I think that scary things, no, I don't want to scare him yet.
I understand. There's enough scary things in the world.
I think he has Sutton's disposition, because even with the Jack in the Box, I was just playing it with him, and in the thing, it scares me because it's like pop and you're like, ah, but it pops and he starts laughing. So I think that he's going to be just fine, actually.
All right, listeners, you heard that. Make sure to send Kevin things that pop, because yes, it really scares him. Do you remember those things that people used to send when the internet was first invented, where it was like, hey, take a look at this house and see if there's something different? And they would send you a picture and you're staring at the house on the screen to see what's different. And all of a sudden, a fucking ghoul would jump out at you on the screen.
No.
Oh,
that's scary.
It's terrifying. I'm not going to send you one, Kevin. I'm going to send
it
you.
Out. I probably blocked it out because I don't like those things.
Oh, no. Trigger warning.
I don't like jumps. I don't like, it's not fun. It's fun for Sutton. It's not fun for me.
Okay. I won't send you one of those. I promise. I'll do a Broadway one. I'll be like, hey, who's in this cast photo? And you'll be staring at this photo of Annie Get Your
Beth
Gun. Beth Level, and this Ethel Merman ghost jumps out at you. Although real Ethel Merman jumping out at you would be just as scary as the ghost jumping out at you.
This is true.
So I will send you folks that you know what I'm talking about, right? And if not, maybe somebody will post something to our Facebook or Instagram so you can see what I'm talking about. It's very fun. It's very scary.
Had a trip too, Rob. You, speaking of scary, you went up to Salem. Did we discuss that yet?
I did. Catherine the Cup Collector, as we're going to call her from this point on the podcast. Catherine the Cup Collector and I went out, and we went to Salem, Massachusetts for the weekend, which was great. First of all, everyone wore masks. like, and the town is so fantastic, being really, really clean and really hygienic, and feeling safe and secure, which was amazing. And we did, we saw where the crucible, we saw like the witch's cemetery. We saw the, where the trial happened. We saw the witch museum. Folks, if you've never been to the Salem Witch Museum, it is a theatrical experience. It's one of those rooms called diorama rooms where it's like a mannequin posed as a witch. Uh-huh. And all, and there's no like automation with it. It's just like she's posed, and over you hear a voiceover of like cheesy actors being like, "My name was Mary Good. I was a witch," you know.
She probably started in like North Shore's musical like a couple years ago.
Yes, exactly, exactly. This person, you know, played Alfred P. Doolittle, and they were like, "He's amazing. Let's get him for a narration." But this museum, I don't know when it was invented, but it feels like it stopped in 1974. Mm-hmm. Like they have not updated its technology any. Although I was very impressed, I must say, at the end of the museum, there's this whole exhibit being like, "Do you still think there's what's the word that I'm looking for? Where they're accusing people of witches? Oh, what? Because they're afraid that they're witches. Anyway, it was saying, do you think today that we still have that in society where people will create a lie because they're scared of a marginalized group?" Yeah. And I was like, well, that's fucking heavy. Like, yeah. It's not all just like chintzy. Like, look at the broom.
No, in fact.
Oh no, I was, they gave examples too. They had this huge mural of like decades. And like the groups that people were scared of and why they were scared of them. And I was like, huh. Very good, Salem Witch Museum.
Like strong, because Sutton is reading about them. And I bought her a periodical about the history of witches. And a lot of times it was just like, if it was a strong woman who wanted to be independent on her own, if it was a person who used other kinds of forms of medicine to help with female, you know, problems downstairs, you know, like it was, you know, and it didn't fall into the Christian, you know, cap. It was like, she's a heretic, you know, and the idea that a strong voiced woman was bad, you know, it's just crazy to me. Opinionated and, you know, that kind of thing. It's crazy.
Well, and then one of the things I could not figure out was like at the trials, if they said you were a witch, or to see if you were a witch, you probably know this, that you were a witch, they threw you into the water. Mm-hmm. And if you drowned, you weren't a witch.
Right.
So congratulations, but now you're dead because you drowned. But if you stayed afloat, you must be a witch. So we'll pull you out of the water and kill you
and burn you. And it's like that Monty Python sketch where she's a witch, yeah, burn her. Yeah.
It's a lose-lose for everybody. So anyway, so I had a great time in Salem, folks. It's not as macabre as I'm saying. It was really fun. We went on a haunted house tour where the tour was stoned. The guy who did the tour was stoned out of his mind. It was the best thing I've ever seen in my life. He couldn't remember anybody's name. Not our names in the group. I mean, like people he's talking about. He got lost a few times. And then in the middle of the tour, he's like, "Yeah, I've been doing this for 10 years. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, what are you smoking? Like, how can I get some? Because if you've been doing this for 10 years and it makes it so powerful, you can't remember people's names. This is incredible.
That's brownie there, man. Wow.
He was having a good time. I forget his name, but don't worry. We left a review on TripAdvisor and got our money back. And then we went over to Provincetown, which I had never been to before, folks. P-Town. I almost had my gig card revoked because I was like, I've never been to P-Town, never been to Fire Island. Now I've been to P-Town.
I got punched. Your other podcast.
My trip to P-Town was absolutely fantastic and amazing because I have not, and I'm sure you haven't either, I haven't seen a live performance since March. And there's a very famous bar in P-Town, folks, called the Crown and Anchor, which every summer has just about like every single notable person come through and play there. And of course, because of this, they couldn't. And so one of our, Kevin and I's friends, we work with a lot of really fantastic actresses. And if you live in Boston, you probably know her. Her name is Mary Callanan. Mary's got a bunch of Broadway credits, but she's like the queen of the Boston theater and cabaret scene. Mary was asked to perform the last show of the season, really the only show of the season, at Crown and Anchor. Mm-hmm. So it was outdoors, socially distanced, and it was wonderful. I had not seen a live performance since March. It was really great. And so I was saying to Kevin before we went on the air, you know, I really, really miss putting on shows, and I know you do too, Kevin, right? I mean, you're least able to do it like in a virtual setting. You know, but it's a sad feeling. But what I found I missed more was the moment after the show where we went to a bar and we all sat around and we all talked and gossiped and caught up. And I missed that. I miss
the lottery. Yeah.
So to paraphrase Kander and Ebb, I don't miss the music, but I miss my friends.
My friend. Yeah. No, that's well put. You're right. So strange not to have that sort of tribe around us like we used to.
Yeah, we don't have our tribe. But hey, we will have our tribe on Saturday virtually with trivia.
I look forward to it so much, folks. It's so much fun to see everyone's faces. It's this Saturday night at 8:00. You know the routine. You can go to our social media to find all the information. Rob will tell you what the exact Venmo to email. I think it's like Rob.
It's Robert-Schneider-5 on Venmo, or if you're a PayPaler, robwschneider@gmail.com, or if you want to donate to the charity directly, the charity this week is Vote Save America, which is a nonpartisan group that helps people get the vote out. You can go to their website, donate, and take a screenshot and send it to us, and we'll just send you the Zoom code for this week. And you can also go on our Instagram and Facebook, and you can see all those directions there as well.
And we do hope that it's worth saying that you do have a vote plan for this election, that you either voted early by mail, put your little, the form in the, county elections mailbox, whatever it is, voting in person. I'm going to vote early, I think, or I'm going to vote on the day. But I think voting on the day, it's going to be very crowded where I am. So I think I'm going to go early because it seems like there's been a lot of long lines everywhere. So that looks like a lot of people are turning out the vote. And that is very, very, very exciting. But we hope no matter who you vote for, wink, wink, please get out and vote.
Exactly. I dropped my ballot. I got my early ballot. I dropped it off. I dropped it off in a safe location. And I feel very, very good about that. So I'm hoping, and tonight's the debate, everybody. So I'm sure by Saturday we'll need a nice laugh because I have no idea what's going to happen tonight. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Isn't that crazy, Rob, that we in this life that we are in, that it's like a weird sort of reality show.
It is
insane. Me too. Side note, we've lost a great legend of the Broadway world this week that I was hoping that we might be able to chat with, and that is the great Marge Champion. Talk about 102, was that right?
102.
I mean, talk about seeing...
Or 101.
Really the span of theater created and developed and evolved in her lifetime. It's just incredible. Of course, this is the wife of Gower Champion, the great song and dance team decades ago. But boy, that woman probably knew all the secrets and all the history of it all. So we lift her up and her memory and her family as well, because she was quite a legacy there.
Yeah, she was 101. She was the model for Snow White.
Yeah.
Right? She won an Emmy. I didn't know this. She won an Emmy for Queen of the Stardust Ballroom because she choreographed it.
Well, that's based on the music. I mean, that's what the ballroom was based on, right? The musical?
Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm reading this. Survivors include a stepdaughter, actress Katie Sagal.
Oh.
I didn't know that. It was Peg Bundy.
Yeah.
And she's on the Connors now. Look at that. I'm learning so much. Good actress.
I think she's great. I've seen her in a lot of things, and I enjoy her. She's quite good.
I'm sure she was a wonderful woman, but if you want a really good laugh, make sure you watch Elaine Stritch at Liberty, because she talks about working with Marge Champion in a production of The Women, I think maybe at the Kenley Players in Summerstock somewhere. you should... It's very funny. Take a listen to that.
Stretch.
Still celebrator, but it's a very funny story about Marge Champion. That's such a shame. And yes, we did try to get her, and unfortunately, she was not available. She was not available because she was busy. It wasn't like she was unavailable because like she's not feeling well. She's a busy person. So may we all live to be 101, and may we all live to have such energy and vitality. Amen. Maybe. I think there's something about dancers. I think, because look at people like the Nicholas Brothers, and look at, I'm trying to think of some others, but Patricia Morrison also. She lived a long time too, I think it's about, having a dancer's body that keeps you alive, which is why I feel like I'm going to live to about 103.
That discipline too. There's such a discipline. Like yes. Cheetah has like crazy discipline. There's like
yes.
They've always had class and they've always done their, I think you're right. There's like a discipline there that you know, maybe your average character actor might not have that kind of discipline. I don't know. Maybe so.
I don't know. I feel pretty disciplined about how many turkey clubs I eat a week. I feel very disciplined. I feel very disciplined that when I go on to Instacart, I always add Ben and Jerry first. And then I'm like, hey, if they got a banana, sure, I'll take it. You know?
What's Instacart?
What's Instacart? Well, you don't have Instacart? It's the grocery delivery service.
Oh, no. We just started doing Fresh Direct. I've never heard of Instacart.
Oh, yeah. Instacart. I've never done Fresh Direct, but Instacart has a whole bunch of different stores on there because they have like Fairway. They have a CVS. They have Staples. They have Wegmans. They have Aldi's. They have Costco. Oh, yeah. Instacart.
I grew up with Wegmans. Wow. Okay. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for going on that journey with me and learning about something that I didn't know.
But listeners, maybe there's a thing that you use that we're not aware of. So yeah. Go ahead and take it. Hey, who has some favorite things? I do. You do, too. Who wants to go first?
I do, too. I will go first. Mine's a little I'm going to take us to a parallel art form that is a cousin of musical theater. And we often will talk about sometimes movies and we'll talk about, you know, sometimes classical world, but this is where I'm going to toe the line with the opera world, friends. I have musical theater friends who cannot stand opera, who are like, I don't know why they're not acting. I don't know why. It's just singing and that's it. And they stand it, blah, you know, and it's just not fun. I've been to operas with people like that almost get mad. And then I have other friends who just love it so much. I have been a late bloomer. I had to study it in college and I don't think I understood it then. And then the older I've gotten and I, you know, in the last 10 years or 15 years or so, I've really grown to love opera. When I have time to enjoy it, I think of it kind of like Shakespeare, where the more that you put into Shakespeare, the more you can get out of it sometimes if you really analyze it and read it and learn about it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Where sometimes people get turned off by Shakespeare because it's like, ugh, what's going on there? I think opera is sometimes very similar. If you can learn a score, if you can learn a show, you can learn the arias and everything going on, the orchestration, then you can really get a lot out of it. And that's why I like opera. So my favorite thing today is an album by one of our world's greatest opera divas that maybe our listeners might know of, maybe they don't, and I would like to introduce her. And I think that it's an album from a couple years ago, like I think like 17 years ago. And a good friend of mine, Dan Marshall, listener of the podcast that I went to college with, he works at the Metropolitan Opera, actually, in I think the educational department. Forgive me if I'm wrong, Dan. And so he was like, hey, have you looked at this? And my mind was blown by it. So the album is called Forever, and it is by the opera diva Diana Damrau. You might say Diana Damrau, but she's from Germany, so we say Diana Damrau. And so it's Diana Damrau. And if you listen to opera, you know that she's like one of the top 10 sopranos. She's a coloratura soprano, and that means that she sings like things like Queen of the Night aria from Die Zauberflöte or the Magic Flute, which is like, you know the song. So that's how her voice sort of usually lends itself.
That's how I start my album.
Well, exactly. But that's your shower song, I think, usually. That's what you've been singing in the shower.
Yeah, and Diana took it from me, but we don't have to talk about it now.
Those high E's. I love when you hit those. So She, Diana has flirted with musical theater throughout her career, being from Germany. Even when she was starting out her career, she did things like My Fair Lady and opera-friendly musicals. What I like about this album is not just her singing, because her singing is glorious, and I'll talk about a couple of the songs that she does, including a lot of American musical theater songs in German, like Green Finch and Linnet Bird. She sings in German. But it is first of all, it's glorious to hear an opera soprano who understands theater and understands acting, but to hear, it's like when Leonard Bernstein would re-record West Side Story and other of his shows with opera singers, because he just wanted to hear it sung, you know, the music sung as beautiful as possible and acted. And so it's actually really glorious to hear some of these songs sung so with such beautiful tone and color, which is what you get out of opera. That's the point, is the storytelling is in the tone and color of the singing and the beauty of it. But what is cool about this album also is the conductor of it, David Charles Abell, who is an American who moved to London in the 90s to conduct. And he conducts the Royal Philharmonic, Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, who sounds just sublime on here. But musical theater folks might know this conductor because he did the 10th and 25th Les Mis anniversary concerts, you know, at the Royal Albert Hall. He did, he was a protege of Leonard Bernstein, but he did the Sondheim 80th BBC concert. There was a big thing at the Prom in 2010, and he was like the driving force behind that. Some consider him on the English soil, sort of like the Sondheim aficionado. So this music is in good hands, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Because sometimes, let's be real. Sometimes when opera people do musical theater and it's conducted by opera people, it doesn't come across. Like, we lose the theatricality of it. Like, it's what I go for when I'm a music director. Like, I have to tell the story with the music in addition to the actor telling the story. But if you're just like conducting, you're like, oh, that sounds nice, we're missing something. And I think he really uses that orchestra to lift up the music. On this album, it is a mix of some classical singing in the first couple tracks, and then we get into operetta. So we have like things like The Merry Widow in German by Franz Lehár and Strauss's Die Fledermaus. So these are very, very friendly opera/musical theater type thing. I mean, Kelly O'Hara was just, I mean, I think that was streaming this week of her at the Metropolitan Opera. They streamed her Die Fledermaus, I believe. So anyway, those are the first couple songs. And then she sings for My Fair Lady. She sings in German, Wouldn't It Be Lovely? But then she also sings in English as well, I Could Have Danced All Night. I mentioned Green Finch and Leonard Bird in German. But then what's really cool is she sings from South Pacific, and she sings I'm in Love with a Wonderful Guy. And you hear no German accent. You hear a lady from Arkansas who, yes, her tone is a bit rounded and lovely, but she's belting her face off by the end. It is not like a fake. It's not like when Renee Fleming tries to quote unquote belt. I'm doing using air quotes, and I love Renee Fleming, but it's like, it's still clearly, you know, the opera place. No, like Diana is serving up full on belt, and it is quite impressive. She does sing a German part of Your World, which I don't know if I needed that, but it's still lovely, and she honors all of the circumstances in it. So I'm not mad about it.
I know what I'm listening to.
The orchestration, the orchestra sounds beautiful. Her singing is beautiful. There is beautiful storytelling going on here and beautiful singing. And I think just to have a little sidestep from our usual musical theater stuff, because I do really deeply believe that opera world, musical theater world, ballet, I mean, all of these art forms that we are, you know, parallel. We're all in this together. We shouldn't like shun each other. And I like to think that we all are trying to do the same thing with entertaining and learning and expressing our art and everything. So anytime I can sort of like do a crossover, I'm super happy to. And so I think this is a chance for our listeners perhaps to listen to someone who might be different. It might not be your cup of tea, but maybe give it a try and hear some of these songs in a new light, because no matter what, it is glorious, beautiful singing of some tunes that you know very, very well. And I think that's really exciting. So check out Diana Damrau. The album is called Forever. It's on all your streaming places. And it's a great listen. It's a really lovely listen.
Hey, I'm going to take a listen to that. I'm going to be honest with you. I know very, very little about opera. I am not a huge opera fan. I need to get into it.
Yeah, and it's like you don't have to. I mean, it's because sometimes it's especially if we're so used to our musical theater, like norms, it can be a bit abrupt when you go to an opera and you're like, wait a minute, why are they just standing and not acting? And some of the younger opera people, like Isabel Leonard, at the Metropolitan, she's this beautiful soprano that is like very ingenue type, and like the younger generation, they take acting lessons. I mean, they are acting singers. I mean, the voice always comes first. Although Maria Callas taught us that, like, you can let the voice suffer for the drama. That's why she was criticized and beloved when she was singing in the 50s and 60s. I think that this is a great sort of, could be a starting point. But do know that you're not going to hear Kelly O'Hara. I mean, it is still like a trained voice, but you are going to hear acting with this singer, and you're going to hear some great moments in the songs as well as the beautiful singing. So, yeah, I would love to introduce you. I would love to go to an opera with you sometime, Rob, when opera, because the Metropolitan Opera season is canceled for all of this year and half of next year, or at least that. But someday, I will train you in the show before we go, so you know what to look for. And then
So let's imagine that there are other people like me who are not huge fans of opera. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend as a transition from the musical theater world into the opera world? Will be a good transition.
I would definitely recommend. There's two different routes. I would first could go the Mozart route. With something like the magic flute, or in German it's called Die Zauberflöte, and that show is very much very accessible. It's part of the reason why the Metropolitan does it during the holidays for families and children, because the characters are very accessible. It's silly, it's fun. I believe in my deep heart of hearts that if Mozart were to like wake up and come out of the grave right now and see what Broadway does, I really believe he'd be like, yes, that's exactly what I was trying to do, you know, way back when. Because he was trying to use the music to help tell the story. Yes, under the classical art form, sometimes del capo, where they repeat sections. Or, yes, under the rules of classical music at the time. But he was inventive in trying to, like, if a song was exciting, he would make the orchestration exciting. And he would try to reflect what was going on in the drama. That's one way you could go. The other way is the more Andrew Lloyd Webber route. So hearing music that is pleasing, passionate, lovely to the ears. Something like by Puccini. My introduction with Tosca is a great opera that is done a lot by Puccini. Also, La Traviata, which some say is sort of like the basis of the movie Moulin Rouge, about, you know, the sort of like a woman of the night who the square good man falls in love with and wants to help, and then she of course succumbs to her sickness and dies, but they're just love each other so much, and the dad tries to keep him away and all of that. And La Traviata has some of the most beautiful, accessible music you can hear. And then if you want more complex theatrical music that is like Michael John Lacusa, if that, then listen to Benjamin Britten. Anything by him that's in English is just, and that, but that's more complex sounding music. So that was a long answer, but there's definitely accessible operas out there that you can really at least key into what.
Oh, your mic is wonky.
I'm so sorry.
You just started cutting out. I'm so sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. That's okay. We don't need to hear any more of that anyway. So that's. No.
I thought it was really good. No, you cut out the last part. You were talking about Michael John Lacusa.
Oh yeah, Michael John Lacusa, and I just said you could listen to something more complex, contemporary opera like Benjamin Britten is all I was saying. So that's, but any one of those, you can't go wrong.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So I think I've got some opera work to do this weekend. What if I come back and I'm just like, I start wearing those Viking horns, because that's what they wear in opera, right? I'm just going to generally stereotype folks. So there we go.
Say, stay away from Wagner. Don't go to Wagner yet. Like, we don't need to go that far yet, because we're talking motifs and it's crazy. Wagner's like, that's like some next level stuff. So we'll wait on that.
Okay, I'll
with the horns. I know.
In our advanced class.
Okay.
Oh God, you know what? Maybe because I'm not really, my ear is not that strong, so I'm wondering if maybe that's why I can't enjoy opera as much, because I'm just like, can somebody talk for a second, please?
Well, there's that.
Is there a dancing on? Why aren't they tapping? Is a huge issue for me in opera. And I will stand at the Met, and I will stand up during the ring cycle and be like, can we tap? And they ask you to leave.
4 hours into it.
They 4 hours, can you tap? And they ask me to leave. So maybe I'm not allowed at the Met. We'll see. Maybe they won't remember in a year. I'll pull some things. You know, it's so interesting that when you were talking about your album, that you mentioned Sweeney Todd in there because she sings Greenfinch and Linnetbird. Mine is actually sort of tied into Sweeney Todd a little bit. So I like when they kind of have like a dual purpose. So I there's a wonder, if you don't subscribe to this YouTube channel, folks, you really, really should, because we've mentioned it a couple of videos on here before. And the channel is Alan Eichler, who I think we should probably have as a guest at some point, because Alan
was that channel so much.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, it's the best. Whenever I'm like, I need some like comfort food right now, I either go to the Aurora Spider Woman or Alan Eichler. He's just, his stuff is so good. Sorry, keep going.
No, Aurora Spider-Woman is back, folks. Aurora Spider-Woman went off for a little bit, and now they're back. So I'm very happy. Alan Eichler was a press – I think he was a press agent. I think he was a publicist. I've met him a couple of times. He's a very nice man. I hate when I do that because I sound like Trump when I do that, when I'm like, I met them. They're a very nice person.
We believe you, so –
it just makes me feel gross when I say that, but he's a very nice person. And he has this amazing YouTube channel, folks, where he has most of the Skippy Lowe stuff, which I'm obsessed with, is on there, but he finds like very rare television clips of older performers singing. It's really wonderful. I don't know how Alan has amassed all of this, but thank God he has, and I'm so happy he's putting it out there. But one of the things he posted recently, which I had never seen before, nor was I aware of, was a television show from Boston, folks, from Boston. The television show was hosted by the Boston critic Elliot Norton. And the show was called Elliot Norton Reviews. And if you're not familiar with who Elliot Norton was, he has been cited as the dean of American theater critics because his style of criticism has gone out of fashion, but it's play doctoring. He'll review the show, but he'll also tell the authors that are working on it what they could do to make it better. And he was he had a 48-year career doing this, and he was so beloved and so respected and so trusted, it was not odd for the writers to take him out to dinner or to lunch and for him to give feedback. And the two shows he's credited with fixing the most is a little show called Oklahoma, in which he gave really fantastic notes to Rodgers and Hammerstein, and a little comedy you might have heard of called The Odd Couple. So he was this incredibly respected individual, but I knew his name, and I know in Boston they give out the Elliot Norton Awards, which is sort of their equivalent of the Tony Awards. I knew he was a brilliant critic because you can read some of his reviews, but what I was unaware of was he had a television show on WGBH called Elliot Norton Reviews that ran from 1958 to 1982. And in that time, he came up with over 1,000 episodes. Now, Alan has not posted all these episodes. I don't even know if Alan has all these episodes. What Alan has posted, though, is perfect for Halloween because it's a 30-minute discussion between Elliot Norton, Angela Lansbury, and George Hearn as they're discussing Sweeney Todd. About 30 minutes long. And it really is fantastic. It talks all about it was interesting. It talks about her process, his process. She talks about what makes him different than Len Carreyrou. George Hearn talks a little bit about, you know, what notes that Sondheim gave him in order to make the show fully fleshed. But what I really like is Elliot Norton has great respect for the show and loves the show. But it's very interesting because he'll give criticism about the production to Angela Lansbury, and they have an actual dialogue back and forth about what works and what doesn't work. And one of my favorite parts in this thing is where he says he keeps trying to press her, and he goes, the young boy who plays Tobias, I can't understand him at all. Why is that? And maybe you could tell him he could speak clearer because I can't understand him. And then they have a debate about his dialect and his accents. He discusses that, you know, a lot of the lyrics are very hard for me to understand the first time around. And then there's a huge discussion about Sondheim at this time, which is, you know, Sondheim's one of those things, right, where you're supposed, the more you listen to it, the more you get out of it. Whereas Elliot Norden, I think, is kind of saying, you know, most people only see a show once. Why do I have to go see something five times to understand it? So it's a really healthy debate there. But what I really love is it's a very well-respected critic with legitimate actual criticism and two actors who want to engage in a discussion with him. So anyway, so folks, it's half an hour. It's a half hour of your time well spent. One of my favorite things is, let me ask you, what's the name of Sweeney Todd's daughter?
Joanna, of course, duh.
Okay, but he says Joanna, right?
Yeah, Joanna.
He keeps calling her, very pointedly, Mr. Norden, Johanna.
I knew
Johanna.
Like Candide.
And I think what he's trying to do is like, you're saying it wrong, folks. He's like trying to give them a subtle clue. You're saying it wrong. Johanna. And it's like Joanna. That's how it says. I know there's an H in it, but we're saying it Joanna. Johanna.
That's the way you say it.
I feel you. Johanna. Doesn't sound right to me. Right?
Oh, that's interesting choice.
Can you sing that for me with the H?
I feel you, Johanna.
Now sing it regular.
I feel you, Joanna.
See how smooth that is? See how nice that is? So I don't know
What's his name? Edward? What's his name?
Elliot Norden. Elliot Norden.
See, Elliot, this is what I love about the podcast, though, Rob, because I did not know anything about Elliot Norden. I did not know anything about that legacy. Even the research I did on Oklahoma for that paper, I didn't come across that. I didn't realize that. And I feel ignorant about that. And so I think that is how cool that he was sort of this little whisperer and respected enough that these writers, you know, that they were all like the good old, I hate to say it, but the good old boys club, where they all like got together and they were probably smoking cigarettes and like figuring out what's going on with the show because they wanted to make it good. They wanted to make it the best show possible. That's really interesting, and I'm happy. I can't wait to check out that Alan's page and look for that.
So, yeah, it's really fantastic, folks. So once again, my favorite thing for this week is Elliot Norden interviewing Angela Lansbury and George Hearn when they were doing the tour of Sweeney Todd in 1981. And Kevin?
And I am the album Forever, sung by Diana Damrau, DianaDamaru, great opera soprano. So check those out. Have a good time.
Diana Damrau. All right. And hopefully we will see you all Saturday for Halloween trivia.
Ooh. Have a great weekend, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.